Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous, who's come all the way from America to see us. I now hand you over to Kathy. Thank you, Kathy.
Hi, my name's Kathy. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm from Redondo Beach. I'm going to try not to suck also because I'm nervous too, so just bear with me. And my sobriety date is November 24th, 2009. I have a home group. It's the Manhattan Beach Women's Drive-Thru. So what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I, too, started using at that typical age of drinking and using at 12. And I am an alcoholic. I know I'm an alcoholic because the results of my alcoholism, I could smell the whiskey coming out of my pores. There was a lot of consequences right from the very beginning. I got in a lot of trouble. It was as soon as my head got changed, there was no boundaries. There was no line I wouldn't cross, nothing I wouldn't do. I spent all of my youth going in and out of all those places. And I didn't know there was a way to stop. I didn't know there was something I could do. And what happened in 1991, I had a daughter. And thank God I had a mother that could take care of my daughter. And it shifted something for me. All of a sudden, there wasn't enough alcohol in America to fill the hole that I'd been trying to fill, you know, for years. So I'm sitting in one of those places again, and my mom, because she was an alcoholic too, she sends me this letter saying that she got sober. And so I started asking her questions. Well, how did you do that? What did you do? And so she started Xeroxing the pages from her big book and mailing them to me. And frankly, it was like Greek. It made no sense. I mean, I could read and I read for fun, but I couldn't understand what I was reading. It made no sense. But when I got out and I'm going to meetings, I could see the hope. I started going to meetings and I'm struggling and I'm trying to stay sober. And I'm in the house that I grew up with, which is a whole nother set of, you know, weirdness, you know, and with my daughter who I hadn't been raising and I'm trying to have a relationship with. And now she's 5. But I'm in the meetings and I could hear the hope and I could see the people laughing. And so I believed them that they were sober. What I hated was the coffee breaks because they discussed things I didn't know anything about. They were talking about raising their kids, paying bills, having jobs. I didn't know anything about that. I was basically feral. And so I just kept showing up. And I started on my first 3 years of sobriety after about a year and a half of trial and error. And my life got amazing so quickly. And I think, and I ended up not being able to stay sober after 3 years. And then, you know, what happened is I had these little jobs. I thought that I had to be a welder because that's the only thing I had ever learned how to do. So I'm welding and I'm welding in the prop shops and I'm blowing black smoke out of my ears and my nose every day. And I'm thinking, wow, this sucks. So I decided that I should just go to school because I'm not dumb. And I started taking academic classes with my roommate. And the experience initially was my very first English class. I worked so hard on this essay. And keep in mind, I didn't go to high school. And I thought I did so well and I get it back with a D. So I go and the teacher's like, I'll talk to anybody. And my friend goes with me, my roommate, and I could feel her shame for me because I didn't know how to write. I didn't know how to put things in order. I just wrote what I thought. And so, but I learned, but I didn't give up either. I stayed in school and I kept going. So I relapsed after 3 years and then I got sober again and I relapsed again after 3 more years. And what I start to tell you is that what had happened is everything got so good. Just taking away the alcohol, my life improved so tremendously that I didn't really do the steps the way they were laid out in order. I can tell you that there was never a problem with powerlessness. I mean, that was clear. There was never, there was never a problem with unmanageability. That was really clear. And I didn't have a problem saying, well, there's magic in the universe. So, okay, there's a God. I mean, I didn't care. I just didn't know how to, the next part, to rely on that. You know, they talked about turn it over to God, let go, let God. And I'm like, okay, that I'm willing, but you need to tell me the action involved because I don't know what you're talking about. And the response I got was, you'll know when you do it. And I found that completely unsatisfactory. I needed an action. There was no connection for me between my head and what I'm saying. Okay, I'll have a belief in. I was so busy my whole life in survival mode, managing and controlling. I didn't know how to let go. So there was all these things going on. Yes, sure, I believe in God, but then there's all this manipulation happening, you know, with every little thing. So I told you I relapsed again after my second 3 years. But what happened in going back to school is I ended up going to university, and then I ended up getting admitted into law school. And I took all these steps, not knowing whether the state would even let me practice because of my history. So I'm in law school and pack up my child. More about her. That poor girl, she would trust me. We have a relationship, and then I blow up her life again, relapsing. But I'll get to that. So I'm in law school and I relapse, and this is a spectacularly wicked long relapse of just over 4 years. And in that time, right as that's starting, my brother gets killed. So I knew, because I'm manipulative, that was just a wonderful excuse and nobody would blame me for what I was about to do. So I took this horrible thing and used it, because that's what I do. Because one of the earlier speakers was speaking about that selfish self-centeredness. I love that because it's perfect and it's true. So this terrible relapse, and I get sober again in 2009, and my daughter's not speaking to me. My mother's not speaking to me. Nobody's speaking to me. And frankly, I don't blame them, because I have zero credibility, and I'm a liar. I'm a liar, and you can't trust me. So I get sober again, and at this point, I'm overeducated and completely unemployable. So I get these little jobs, and I show up, and I just show up, because none of the circumstances I'm now involved in are anybody's fault but mine. I created them all. So I'm doing these jobs, and I'm working on my steps. Again, powerlessness, not a problem. Unmanageability, clear examples of that. I still believe that there's something going on in the universe. And now I'm figuring out how am I going to implement that and let that work in my life. And so I get through school, but I know my brain's not working well enough to take the exam. I stopped speaking to the state bar because they knew I had to tell them, you have to disclose everything. So they know my history and they know that I've gotten myself in a wreck again. And, I just couldn't even deal. I'm hiding from it. So I'm stuck in the world with my needs being met, but nothing else. I mean, I'm not doing anything to fill any holes. I'm left with me and my recovery and my higher power. And I had to find out how to be okay. There's nothing I could do besides the next step to start getting my life on track. There was no manipulation I could do. There was no maneuvers I could make. And that was a whole new position for me, because I never considered in my youth the result of my using I didn't think that that was like the end result and I should change something, because I had no relief back then. So I get sober this time, and I do a fourth step that is unlike any fourth step I ever did before. And I'm doing my column work, and I'm getting to my part. And rather than, and what it affects. And I'm asking the questions, why, how, and I'm logically cross-referencing between my big book and my 12 and 12, the questions that they're asking. And I'm praying every time I pick up my pen, just let me see the truth. Just let me see the truth, because I could never see the truth of my behavior and the stories that I would tell myself justifying my behavior, because I was fluent in victimese. I was that angry victim using it to justify all my bad behavior. So, and I'm not a victim. So I love the big book and I love the 12 and 12. And one of the things that gives me power is the spiritual axiom. The spiritual axiom that whenever I am disturbed, there's something wrong with me. If that's the truth, and I believe it's the truth, that empowers me. Because if I'm the problem, then I have the ability to seek the solution. And seeking that solution gives me the relief that I need as an alcoholic, because that's what I always need. What I found out in hindsight is every time I started drinking and using again was because I had no relief, because I hadn't practiced, I hadn't done the 12 steps in a way that I could then practice them in my life to give myself ongoing relief. Because without relief, I will drink again. And I know that clearly now. And I didn't know anything before. I kept showing up and trying, and I am too someone who doesn't learn from other people's mistakes. I have to hit my head on these walls, and I've hit my head on a lot of them. And luckily I've lived through it, and I can say that I'm so grateful that I'm in a place in my life that I have recovery that gives me relief and lets me be a human that I feel good about. You know, I've said in my women's meeting here that everything that I've learned about being a decent human, I've learned in these rooms from you ladies. And so my daughter, I told you, she's 29 now. She didn't speak to me the first 4 years I was sober this time. Again, who could blame her? And then, you know, I made an amends to her. And in a nutshell, basically, I told her, I'm so sorry. I was the worst mom in the world from my perspective, and she deserved better. I mean, that's really short shrift. I did a proper amends. And her response was, I never thought I'd hear you say that. That gets me teary, because I was so selfish and justified everything I did so much my entire life that I couldn't own my part in anything until I did a proper fourth step. And that was when I had 2 years sober this time. And she still didn't talk to me for another 2 years, which I don't blame her, but she moved closer to me and she started reaching out. And I just made sure that when she needed me, I was available. So one of the things that helped me learn my powerlessness and that I'm not in charge was my daughter became a type 1 diabetic when she was 8. When she turned 18, I no longer could tell her anything about how she managed her diabetes. I couldn't ask her any questions. She shut it down. She did not take very good care of herself, and she periodically would end up in the hospital, and it was bad. My mom would tell me she's in the hospital during this 4-year period. So I would call her and ask her if she'd like me to come. If she wanted me to come, I show up. I show up the next day. I don't do what I did before, which was just put off everything or any commitments I had and go there. She's in a hospital. I can't control it. She's got a God and it's not me. I will show up and be available and do what I can. And that's what I did. And I was able to, and it was scary because there's a real possibility that she will not outlive me because of her behavior. And there was nothing I could do. There's nothing. I can't fix her and her decision making. I couldn't even fix me, clearly. But now in this recovery, I mean, I have so much. We have a close relationship. Periodically, it's tumultuous. I'll be with her this weekend. But I have boundaries. She has boundaries. And it's because of the steps in AA that I can have a relationship with her, because it says in the book that, what is it, the hallmark of an alcoholic is defective relations with our fellows. I had never had a good relation. So in recovery, I got married to a man I was with off and on. And he's not one of us. Maybe he is, I don't know. But it was not the best fit. We separated last year, and today I'm officially divorced, which, you know, it is what it is. That was the point of telling you that, is that's the first relationship I went into and went out of where I didn't blow it up on the way out, blaming somebody and making them the bad guy. Because of column work, I can see where I made a decision based on self, and later, you know, and my fellows retaliated. I mean, it's clear. Through everything that comes up in my life, there's a solution in the pages of the big book and the 12 and 12, or a similar thing that I can go and look and rely on. What was I going to tell you? I am a lawyer. They finally let me do that. So I got sworn in 2014. They put me through the paces because you have to have a moral character determination. And clearly, I was of suspect moral character for a long time. I don't practice criminal law because the thought that I could do something poorly one day and it would cause somebody their freedom, my ego can't take that. I don't have that kind of ego that I want to be responsible for that. So I help people in another field of law, and predominantly family law, which can be ugly, but those are people at a really bad time in their life. So I got married in recovery this time and divorced peacefully in recovery. I have a relationship with my daughter. I have parents, my mom and my dad. They both passed. My dad passed in 2016, but he had 7 years. We had an amazing relationship for 7 years, and he came and lived with me on hospice the last 4 months of his life. And you know what? It was hard. And I would go to my women's meeting and be like, "Oh my God." And I am so grateful for that opportunity to have been there for him. And as hard as it was, I showed up and I did it. You know, I showed up. My mom passed last year, and she'd been deteriorating for a year or so, but it was still sudden and took us all by surprise. This is all when I'm getting ready to go through this divorce. So I was going to move to a new area, and I had a moment of clarity where I'm like, I need to stay in this area where these ladies are. I have other support systems in different geographic areas, like out in the desert, but these ladies have known me the previous 7 years, and I'm going through a divorce. My mom just died. I'm like, those are two big, you know, life events. I didn't want to move away again, because my previous to the last relapse, I had packed up my daughter and we moved to Michigan because that's where they accepted me for law school. A wonderful thing. But again, I didn't have the skill set to maintain my recovery back then. So the last 10 years have been so amazing. And what I do now to maintain my recovery is I do have a meditation practice. I meditate at least Monday through Friday from 5 to 15 minutes in the morning, depending what my day is going to look like. If I'm having a bad day, I check out and do it again and give myself another 5 minutes because I need a restart. It makes me a kinder, gentler human being. It makes me focus with clarity when I go into my job to be of service to the people I work for and with. It helps me not to think about myself, which is one of the reasons I don't like to speak, because I am so tired of me and my story. I'm bored with myself, and this is the first time in this recovery I've spoke to a large group for this long. I have sponsees that I work with, and that is so fulfilling. They've taught me so much. I've had the experience where the sponsee will be reading a fifth step to me, and she'll have something on it, and I'll be like, oh, ooh, I did that. That's not on mine. Because who can remember a lot of stuff? So I learn things, and I learn how to be available for people with nothing, with wanting nothing in return and getting so much in return. And one of the earlier gentlemen that shared was saying the same thing, you know, put in a penny and get back a pound. I have learned in this recovery how to give without expectation, and not all the time. Let's not get crazy. I mean, I have times where I have to stop myself because I'm not living in the spiritual principles. I'm doing what Kathy does, and it's never to the level it used to be. But once in a while, I will find myself and I'm like, whoa, 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 that's old behavior. That's an old thought process. And I don't want to be involved in that. I want to stop it, because those thought processes for me, that negative thought process gives me an emotional charge that takes me down a slippery slope. And for me, it's my thoughts that lead to my behaviors, and my thoughts lead to how I feel about things. And my recovery, I know I'm balanced when I have appropriate emotional responses to situations. There's no giant highs and lows. And I didn't have any of that before. Everything was a big deal. Everything was drama. And that's not my experience or my lifestyle now. So when that starts to happen, I know that there's something wrong with me spiritually, and I need to back up and look at what's going on with me. Because again, back to the spiritual axiom, if I'm messed up, it's me. It's not anything anybody's doing, because old Kathy, before this fourth step, made you responsible for my feelings. I mean, if I felt bad, it was your fault because you didn't do something or say something or act in a way that made me feel the way I thought I should be feeling. And the truth in that is that there's nobody that could ever act, say, or behave or give me enough to make me feel good all the time. That's the outside things to fill the inside job. And I didn't realize any of that before. I just was running on instincts. The book talks about instincts running wild, and that's what it was. Instincts on survival. How much more time do I have?
About 2 minutes now.
I'm sorry.
2 minutes.
Oh, good. I can be done. Thank you for inviting me to share here. I'm still nervous. I hope that this was, that somebody learned something from it. I'm walking through the fear of doing this. So here I am doing it. And I'm grateful that it's not behind a podium, because my knees would be buckling, and that is not a good look for anyone. So with that, I'm proud to be a active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I do not doubt for 1 minute, despite my relationship with outside issues, that I am 100% an alcoholic. And I'm grateful to be here. So thank you so much for having me.